Well, good evening, everyone. I'm Pam Stack, your host, and this is Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Tonight, I am bringing back one of my most favorite authors of all time, Steve Conkley, whose new book is called Fractured State. Steve writes in it post-apocalyptic, but not zombie stuff. I want you to understand that. These are thrillers, but not too far into the future. Steve has an interesting background, though, and I need to ask him about this because as many times as we've spoken before, I still didn't get a clear answer. He's been in the Navy and in the Marine Corps, and I know he was some mucky muck on a ship, and he did all this, you know, all kinds of stuff while he was there, and he's traveled all over the world, so he really has had an interesting life. But in the meantime, when he was in the Naval Academy, he got a bachelor's degree in English literature. So go figure. We're going to talk about Fractured State and a bunch of other things. Let me welcome to the show my friend and a terrific author, Steve Conkley. Steve, welcome back to Authors on the Air.
Thank you, Pam.
It's good to hear from you again. How's everything?
Well, I'm deep into my zombie series. Just kidding.
You are not.
No,
I know
no,
you
I'm
better
not.
Than that.
Yeah. No, I'm doing great.
Last time I spoke to you, you were going to make a move, and then the move was stalled, and you finally got moved. So you're kind of in middle America right now, aren't you?
That's right. We've lived in California, Maine, so I figure we're going to go smack dab in the middle, almost in the middle, in Indiana. So I live right outside of Indianapolis.
Very good. How do you like it?
We love it. I'm from Munster, Indiana, which is in the northwest corner,
okay. Kind
of about 30 minutes out of Chicago. So, you know, it's kind of coming home. My mother's here. So, we're really enjoying it. It's very different. Everyone's so friendly here. It's probably a lot like Florida.
Oh, not even. It might be like the west coast of Florida, but certainly not the east coast where I'm from. No, the west coast is fine. The east coast is quite a bit different, as you well know. So let's get this thing about the Navy and the Marine squared away. How can you be in both?
Okay, so long story short, I was not in the Marine Corps. What I did, when I graduated, I was commissioned as a naval officer. And 4 years, well, actually, after my first tour of duty on a ship, I said, there's not a single chance in hell that I'm going back onto another ship. So I really looked for just about anything you could possibly do, and I'd always had a soft spot for the Marines. I had done a lot of training while at the Naval Academy during the summers. It was kind of in my blood to be wearing camouflage and doing all that kind of fun stuff. So I looked for any job that involved a naval officer being assigned to a Marine Corps unit, and I found a really cool crew called Anglico Air Naval Gunfire Liaison Company out of Camp Pendleton. We got to do all kinds of high-speed stuff, and I continued with it. So my next tour of duty for the next 2 years was also with the Marines.
But you were still a naval officer, even though you worked with the Marines.
Correct. So I was definitely an outcast for four of my years. I put up with a lot of shit from the Marines, and it was great. I mean, I absolutely, you can imagine.
You loved
take
it.
A guy. Oh, I did, absolutely. It whipped me back into shape and, kind of gave me a really good appreciation for what you call the Navy Marine Corps team, not to get too sentimental, but what they do.
Now, you did an awful lot of traveling when you were in the Navy and when you worked with the Marines, didn't you?
I did, and I was So I was primarily stationed on a ship. I was in Japan, and that ship was gone. We were gone at least half, if not more, of the time. So I think I traveled to 20, almost 30 different countries there. And then with the Marines, not so many with the Marines, but I went to the Middle East to several different countries there for very short periods of time, and traveled all over the country, working with the Army, all over the place. It was definitely a busy 4 years.
But yet you knew this wasn't going to be a career for you.
Yeah, you know what, I really enjoyed the Marine Corps aspect of it so much, and it was something that's kind of ingrained into me at the Naval Academy. I never intended to go to ships. That's a story for a long story for another time. But
okay.
for when you're a ship officer, you will eventually end up. The Navy does everything they can to get you back to ships. So while I enjoyed those 4 years, I knew going back to the next level, you rank up and go back to as a department head. That was going to be on back-to-back sea tours, which is like 48 months of just the same stuff over and over again. And I absolutely did not want to do that again.
Ah, you wanted new adventures then. And there's a limited amount that you do work-wise on board, not whatever your mission is, but you can only go so many places on board a ship, correct?
Well, you know, it's extremely varied, and it's very exciting. It's just very busy, and we had just had my son Matthew was one when I made this decision. So, I remembered how often I was gone. I mean, it was great when you're a single guy with no attachments, no commitments. It was fantastic.
Sure.
We were all over. It's grueling when you're on sea. You have a great time. You know, you work hard and play hard. But as a married guy with a family, being away that much, I mean, you see it right now. I remember, you know, when we were in the midst, really in the heyday of the Iraq War, when people were gone.
Yeah.
It takes a big toll on families, and I didn't want to put everyone through that.
I'm sure. So you knew you wanted to write. So because obviously you got your degree in English literature, where did the love of writing come from? Wait a minute. Let me back the card up here. Did you think this was going to be a snap class? Did you think, oh, Shearer, all I got to do is sit around and read these great books, I'm going to breeze through this degree like no one's business?
So I always loved, there's some truth to that. I always loved reading, writing, literature. It's just something. I'm a voracious reader as much as I can be today. But back years ago, I mean, I would have a book with me at all times. So someone gave me some very good advice when I was entering my sophomore year there when we were choosing majors. He said, you know, you can get an accredited degree in mechanical engineering, and when you graduate from the Naval Academy, you're going to be doing the same exact thing as the guy with an English degree who had a lot easier time, actually enjoyed themselves, and got better grades, and got to pick the best thing to do. You got to pick what you do at the Naval Academy based on your grades. So it was a no-brainer decision to do something like that.
So it was because you thought it was a snap class. Jeez, Steve.
Pretty much,
had
yeah.
You written, had you written before? Well, let me ask you this. Wait a minute. I'm sure you enjoyed it because you liked reading. Had you considered that you were going to become a writer after that?
Absolutely not. I had no idea. The writing thing for me was definitely a later in life experience. Something that's, I mean, geez. I started like in my mid-30s, really, when I kind of got this crazy idea that I wanted to write a story. And it took me 3 or 4 years to write the first book, The Jakarta Pandemic, and everything just kind of took off from there. I honestly had no idea it was viable. I've had a very non-traditional writing career, to say the least.
So you didn't jump right from leaving the services to sitting down and saying, I'm going to put that degree to work right now. I think I'll write a book.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have a Bachelor of Science in English, and what that translates to is I was allowed to take the minimum amount of English literature courses you could take, and the rest of it was like mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, physics. I have a deep math and science background. So, no, I didn't get a lot of writing training there. Actually, when I left the Navy, I went and worked for Pfizer and sold every possible pill. I was a drug dealer, as my in-laws said.
Right.
So I worked for them for almost 12 years.
Wow. Yeah, they'll take anybody, won't they?
They really will. <I'm just laughs>
kidding.
Those are the best jobs.
They actually, aren't they one of the largest pharmaceutical houses in the world now?
Pfizer is, yeah. There's, you know, it's yeah, changed so much. Merck
hear.
Used to be, but yeah, Pfizer still, it's very, very big. Great company.
Yeah.
It just, the writing thing took on a life of its own. I'm like, you know what, I can only put my energy into one of these, or do I want to, so.
All right. So how did you decide that you were going to write post-apocalyptic dystopian thrillers? Because that's just not a real common genre, or it wasn't at the time, one that one would just normally go to if they're going to write thrillers. You wrote a thriller, and it was, crime fiction usually, or spies or something.
Right.
So what made you decide on post-apocalyptic?
I really just got motivated to tell the story. I've always been a big fan of pandemic, Ebola, the hot zone,
mm-hmm.
Stories
mm-hmm.
like that. And just I just got this wild kind of idea for a story based in my, it's literally looking out of my office window at the neighborhood. There's a lot of similarities between the neighborhood and that book, my first book, and the story. And it just kind of took on a life of its own. I had no intention of, writing a post-apocalyptic. I had no idea what to call it, honestly. I think I called it a medical thriller. I called it pretty much every thriller term under the sun. But it definitely now that the genre has become kind of more defined, it's considered post-apocalyptic or not dystopian. Yeah, it's an interesting category, but I had no intention of actually writing in it. And, my next four books were actually spy thrillers, espionage, covert ops, and then I went back to it because I had enjoyed it so much in the first place.
Well, let's talk about the Jakarta pandemic, because that truly is the book that sets the tone for the rest for Perseid Collapse and
right.
And your Kindle world. So let's talk about Jakarta Pandemic, because I love that book. It was wonderful.
Awesome.
And apparently a lot of other people loved it too, because for a man who never promotes himself, you have more reviews, and it's just amazing. Most people would say, "Are you stupid? You don't promote yourself? What is this? You were self-published until you signed the ink with Thomas and Mercer, but you don't. You blog an awful lot, I know, but
you
never talk about yourself." So I think that's a wonderful thing, but it's also indeed tells how good your writing is, because you don't have to talk about yourself and promote it.
I'm glad you think so. My wife absolutely hates the fact that I don't talk about myself. She's like, "You're the absolute worst, at a party or just anywhere." She's like, "Jesus." Just move aside. I'll tell everyone all about your books.
But it is true that in a self-published world, you really do have to market yourself, and you have to treat your books as though they were your small business. And obviously it's not a small business for you anymore, but you've talked to Russell enough and heard him talk about it. He shamelessly self-promotes. He comes on my show every 3 months to tell everybody how great he is. And I love him.
Who's
the bigger fool, right?
I know. you do almost have to twist my arm to get me to go on a show or do something. And it's not that I'm opposed to it. It's just I honestly just don't think of it. But, I know you bring up guys like Russell Blake. I know there's some people listening now. People I've got, writers that I've been friends with, from the beginning, and they've been the key to getting the word out. I mean, really, it's been, I have a very tight network of people, and I promote on Facebook, but, no more than anyone.
No, you don't. All my stuff for posting on your Facebook page today. All the stuff that I've tagged you in.
Well, you did all the work.
Only
you did
thing...
all the work for me.
See, how nice am I? All right, I'll be expecting my cut,
Exactly.
Let's talk about the Jakarta pandemic. And because this book really was the beginning of all of this, I think, anyway. So go ahead.
Yeah.
Let's have the pitch. We've got plenty of time to talk, and then we're going to ask for callers, too.
What do you want to know about it?
Well, how about you tell listeners about this book that kind of started you in the post-apocalyptic series genre?
Gotcha. So when I set out to write it, well, first I researched it extensively, like an idiot. I spent I was in that research paralysis or analysis paralysis, whatever they call it.
Right.
And I said, I'm like, you got to just start writing this thing, because you have all these fake, figures you've created and death rates and that. But I wanted to, I wanted to set out and write something different. I didn't want to take the CDC, you know, the hot running young CDC agent or protagonist, you know, that's going to save the world. I really wanted this to be a very different type of thriller, you know, part psychological. Just I wanted to just really explore what would happen, you know, within a neighborhood, within a family, you know, within neighbors, you know, and how they would react to just an incredible crisis being a pandemic that is unlike anything the world has ever seen. So that was like, that was the start of it, you know, then my idea. I'm like, I'm going to do something and I'm going to do it different. And I think that was the part of the appeal, because it's, even today, it's just, it's not something that's really replicated. I've seen it replicated maybe once or twice, and it's, it's not common. It was
so
a big,
let me
and
see if
I think
I get
it
this
appealed
right
a lot
with
of people.
Your protagonist is a guy who's a pharmaceutical rep who used to be in the service, who lives in middle America and loves his family. Where have I heard that?
Well, he's in, he, well, he lived in Maine, where I lived.
Oh, Maine, where you used to live.
No, no.
There you
go.
And,
you know, and that's it. You know, I did not, in my first book, I was you know, tentative, you know, or hesitant. You know, I have never done anything like this before. So I definitely said, I'm like, I'm going to write exactly what I know, but I'm, but obviously, you know, the fictional element in the story, but I'm just going to, the setting's going to be the same, the house, everything. I mean, I don't live in that house anymore, but you know, the one reader's, you know, experience through the Jakarta pandemic was very, would be very eerily similar to the one that was, walked by Alex Fletcher.
Yeah, it's not something that's, you know, now we're talking, we get all these beginnings of pandemics coming along, like Ebola and now Zika and everything else. So it is not unheard of for something like that. As a matter of fact, I wonder how, you know, just kind of off topic for a minute, but how you feel about our Olympians going to Brazil in light of the fact that they now know Zika affects the brain.
Yeah,
know,
no, we were going to take a trip. I mean, I'm taking a cruise to Alaska. So that's how I feel about it. I don't get very worried. Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to worry about mosquitoes up there.
You want it, but guess where we were going. I'm not making this up. We were knee deep. I mean, just short of buying plane tickets to Puerto Rico. I've always wanted to go, and I just really I've done a ton of research, and I'm like, this is going to be awesome. And then my wife's like, do you really want to go to Puerto Rico? And we did a little more digging, and I'm like, geez, that was a good call. It's like ground zero. I mean, I think it's the country they talk about the most, other than Brazil.
It's actually in very bad shape because all the systems are broken since they're bankrupt. So you made a wise choice going to Alaska for sure.
Yeah. So no mosquitoes.
I have to leave town during this. It's already 90 degrees here in Southwest Florida. It's only the middle of May. Not even the middle of May. It's crazy.
Beautiful.
So we started off with the Jakarta pandemic, and then that brought you, did it not?
Well, I wrote the Black Flag series between that.
The Black Flag.
Often overlooked by, you know, everyone, including myself. So.
Well, let's talk about Black Flag, because that's a different kind of a book, kind of, sort of.
Right.
And your reviews on that, once again, are outstanding. You don't have anything below a 4-star review, I don't think. It's amazing. Let's talk about this particular series, because this is a more in present day, but this is really an ops book, correct?
Right. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
No. Go right ahead. I'll ask when you finish.
No. I was gonna say. So I wrote the Jakarta pandemic, and I had no idea really what happened, if people would like it. You know, the early indications were that people would, but I had no idea. So I thought, I'm gonna move on and write something else. And I really, I'm a big fan of the techno thriller, spy thriller, covert op. It's really hard to define this genre, this thriller genre. I was a big fan, and I just wanted to write in that genre. So I conceived of the Black Flag concept, and I wanted it once again to be different, a very kind of different type of almost anti-gray area protagonist. You don't really know whether you like him or he's a good guy or a bad guy. And I wanted to base the whole series around him.
So there are three books in Black Flag?
Four, actually.
Four, okay. It's kind of hard to see when I'm looking at your Amazon page.
Yeah.
Because you've also contributed to a couple other worlds in Kindle Worlds to Blake and to Russell's world. You've also contributed to. Do you like doing that? Do you like contributing to that?
I do.
Why? What is the appeal of writing? Well, it's not fan fiction because you're a professional writer. But what is the appeal to you to writing in somebody else's world? Other than, I mean, they have written in yours. I realize that too. So
yeah, Russell did. No, you know, the appeal, it's a part of it is a challenge, actually, to me. I wish I had more time to do it, honestly. You know, Russell's The Jet series, you know, it was,
sure.
he had a very special license with his series that allowed writers to bring in their own characters. So my world was different. The Persian world, you know, whatever you write in there stayed in there. So you didn't, you know, it was owned by Amazon. If you brought one of your characters from one of your established series in, then that character was now the property of Amazon. Well, that has loosened up, and Russell is one of the, you know, first couple worlds that allowed people to bring it in. So it was just like a natural. I mean, you have a black ops Israeli Mossad female agent, and my series has a very hardcore female black ops operative. It was just like made to be. So it was great to kind of, you know, and I'd read all this stuff, so merging those two was fun, and it was a challenge. And I had the same challenge with Wayward Pines. I wanted to make these books as true to those worlds as possible with my own flair, so to speak. And I just love it. Like I said, I wish I had more time to do it, you know, but I don't. I'm busy writing my own stuff.
Right. Now, so then after that, you wrote The Perseid Collapse. And you also wrote a book called No Apocalypse Required with Randy Powers, who is brilliant as far as I'm concerned. And a friend. And, hopefully we're going to hear more from Randy. I know he wants to call in and say hello. But in the meantime. In the meantime, Perseid Collapse is one of the best books I ever read. I have to tell you, it was just an amazing book. I read that. I mean, I read a lot of books, you know that. So, but I stayed up to read that and then had to sleep during the day the next day because it was so good. I really, really enjoyed the story. And I will tell you what else is it scared the crap out of me because – you know, I've lived in Florida all my life, in South Florida, first in Miami and now on the Southwest Coast. And we've learned to be prepared for a certain, for a short amount of time, a week. We know how to take care of ourselves. You know, if you've ever been down here during, if there's even a thought of a tropical storm forming anywhere around Florida, the news stations go crazy. There's a run on wood at the Home Depot or Lowe's. Every loaf of bread in the grocery store goes out, and every case of water. Although it always cracks me up. I'm thinking, bread? Really? Why?
Yeah.
It's going to go bad in a couple days, you know?
Maybe. Yeah.
But beer, that's right. You get beer, you get wine, you get water, and, 5 million cans of tuna fish, which then at the end of the hurricane season, you donate to a food place or something, a food collective. But anyway, what it did, though, is it told me that I was nowhere near as prepared as I thought I was. And I bet you that you had a lot of that same reaction from from some of your readers. Did you?
I did. You know, for even with Jakarta, the Jakarta pandemic. That's what that that was one of the most common personal emails I would receive. I mean, it was in the reviews as well, but I'd get emails just saying, you know, I never thought of this. You know, and with Jakarta, it was never something I had set out to do. I just really was telling a story, but then I realized that, you know, there really is a value in just, embedding that into the story without, you know, beating people over the head. Because, it, you know, there's definitely some, you know, fiction that, you know, it's really just, survival manual, kind of wrapped around a story. And some people might say there's a little too much of that in the perceived collapse, and there probably is. But I just absolutely love that aspect of it, and figured how can I get this into an engaging story? And you know, while I'm glad I got you thinking that you're not prepared, but you know, you do realize that was quite an event, the perceived collapse.
No, I understand that, but you do have to remember I read Jakarta after Perseid,
right.
So. I wish I had read it the other way. It didn't detract from it either way. It didn't detract
way.
It's just that I know intellectually that was an extreme event, and I'm not convinced that it wouldn't happen. I just think it was an extreme event. But the fact of the matter is, there were things that I had to stop and think about for the safety of myself and my pets, you know, that I had not given any thought to. So,
one of the top. Good.
Yeah, it's a really big issue. When you live in a small space, an apartment, you don't have, you know, I don't have a room, a safe room or anything like that. So you have to work with what you have to be safe. And it's interesting because I never thought about keeping my car prepared either, but now it is.
Right. It's funny, it's an extreme event, but, you know, it's the main reason aside from I absolutely, you know, love the guy, is teaming up with Randy Powers from Practical Tactical to come up with the practical prepping, no apocalypse required. You know, that was our goal, was to show like that, you know, even just the most basic of preparations can make the biggest difference. You know, you don't have to build a bunker with, you know, 10 years of food in it. Like I said, it sounds like it had that effect on you. You know,
the effect was, what can I do in a reasonable way if services are not available? And, you know, yeah. I was right in the middle of Hurricane Andrew when that hit, and I will tell you, though, I remember being stunned seeing the military on the street. I had never seen anything like that before. And I recognized why it was there, because it was such a devastating storm. And there was so much looting of homes, first of all, and then, of course, businesses. But it was still, I started to cry when I saw it, because it's not anything you ever think about. But, I also was talking last night to some Canadian authors when we were on the air about the wildfires going on in Canada.
Ugh.
And 88,000 people having to be evacuated. Can you imagine? How do you prepare for something like that? Well, you know, it's really difficult. If you can get out, you've got to take your pets. You've got to take your elderly. If someone's, you know, got a physical or mental challenge. And, you know, what if somebody needs oxygen all the time? Just things that you never think about long-term planning. And so I had a really nice conversation with Randy about it, and he really helped me out a lot, I have to tell you.
Awesome.
Let me just take a break right now and tell everyone that I am speaking to Steve Conkley. The number to call in and chat is 347-633-9609. The switchboard is open if you want to talk to Steve, by all means. This is a trademark copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. Okay, I've done my job. I can get a paycheck at the end of the week. That $10 comes in handy. And the phone lines are open, 347-633-9609. I want to talk about Fractured State. another stunningly successful book. It is not unheard of for us to hear about states that want to secede from the United States, from America. Texas has always said that. And, you know, in Florida, they swear they want to divide it just north of Disney World and let that the south end of us kind of float off and do our own thing. And the north end goes with the rest of the country. So
they're going to dig a big trench and let you float away. Is that it?
Yeah, they're going to be real surprised about that, too, because the south is really in the north part of Florida. The ones in the south are make a little bit more sense. Oh, really, really terrific. Let's take a call first.
Yep.
Hi, you're live. Who's this? Hi, you're
Are
live
you
on
talking
the air.
To me? Hello?
Yes, I'm talking to you. Yes. Area code 256.
That's me. Hey, Pam, how are you?
Fine.
This is Carol Ricketts. This is Carol
Ricketts.
Hi, Carol.
Ricketts.
How are you? As you know, they all call me Dixie, so, you know, hey, what can we do? But I wanted
That's
to tell
okay.
Tell him two things. Number one, I have read,
you
know, I'm an avid reader.
Him's right there, Carol. Him's right there. Him's can hear you. Say hi to Steve.
Hi.
Steve,
how you doing?
Hey. Tell him he needs to move south. I have relatives in Indiana, much friendlier down here. But anyway, I was going to tell y'all something, and actually I read one of his – the reason I read the very first of his books, I'm telling you this, but is because, you know, I had read The Wayward Pines, and I'm an avid reader as well, and I tell you, then I looked up every single thing I could find about that particular writer, and I came across you. So, and of course I read that book, and you know, it's amazing to me because actually it was 2011 that I started reading this genre. And the reason is I got hit at my business and my home directly by a tornado. And we went 30 days, no power, you know, living, you know, learning what it was like to live, you know, in these kind of worlds. When, you know, everything is down, there's no services, you know, you go save whatever computers you can save from your business. And mine happens to be a real estate business at the time. So, you know, and I think most people don't really have a clue. You know, they press a button, their coffee comes, they, you know, they don't really think about those things. And I think reading these books, you know, they help us all. So, but anyway, mostly I wanted to tell him he needs to listen to his wife. I also do a whole lot of... listen to your wife, okay? Okay. Yeah. You know, you can laugh all you want to, but listen, I know
time.
About you Indiana boys.
I'm not
she's
laughing. I listen
to
her, believe me.
She's banished him to another room. She's just tired of him not listening. So, you know, she knows I'm on her side.
Yeah. Well, you know how I am, Pam, a little crazy. So what I say is about that, you know, you can put your dog in, you can put your husband in the trunk and whichever one, when you open that door, is happy to see you, the one you take out. But anyway, the point is.
There you go.
the point is, you know, I enjoy your books, and I will be reading most of the others because having read several authors and, you know, many genres, I find yours actually refreshing. And so, I'll keep reading them. You know, you keep writing
Carol,
them. And
let me ask you a question. Have you read Fractured State yet?
No. In fact, when I saw your post today, Pam, I went in on the Kindle and, you know, purchased this book. So, you know me, I'm a one-night reader as well. So, you know,
right.
I will be reading
Thank you, Carol. That's awesome.
But
I know you're good about reviewing, Carol. You know, but I want you to just when you finish reading it, I want you to let me know because I think it's going to blow you away. I think when you read this, puts you right in the present day, even though it kind of sort of isn't. But it's going to put you right in the present day, and you're going to think, "Oh my God, this is what's going to happen." Really, truly, it's a great book.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's, I mean, what's, I could laugh, y'all would laugh and think this is funny, but actually I live in an underground house. A lot of people don't know that.
I think that's pretty cool.
Is
it because of the tornado?
It's kind of a long story in a way. You know, the reason that I live in an underground, well, I told you, I'm also a real estate broker, but I also, you know, do a lot of promotion and stuff for some Nashville artists. I think you know all that, Pam. But
yep.
What the reason I actually live in this underground house, you know, is because my father, who passed away recently, he was nutty, okay, when it came to, you know, being prepared and being, you know, he's a military person. I was born in Japan, so, you know, I'm familiar with all the military business, but... And he was in the Navy and the Air Force and worked for the Army. So, you know, he was always, you know, you got to have water, you got to have this, you got to have that. And, you know, I was like, Dad, you're driving me crazy. You know, I told you, he's kind of crazy. But anyway, the point is, I could never have a house unless it had a basement. That was just his, you know, that was no matter, he's like, don't sell people houses without these basements, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, Dad, you know, people can buy whatever house they want to buy, you know. Well, it's just not, you know, it's criminal if you sell them a house.
In Florida, Carol, though, you can't have a basement here because you only go so far down and you're in limestone. I mean, you hit water, mm-hmm. and you don't have to go that far. So, I tell you, I did grow up in a neighborhood that was, you know, a very friendly neighborhood, except one house a street over from us where they had a bomb shelter out back, and they had mm-hmm. lots of little crosses all over their yard where their pets had died and buried them, and everything was overgrown. It was a really creepy house.
Oh,
it was great for Halloween. We were scared to death.
You should come visit me, Pam. You'd fit right in.
I would love it. Carol, have you read the Jakarta Pandemic yet, the beginning of the series for Percy?
I have. I have
read it.
And
good.
I also I read the preliminary one, Genesis, you know, from the beginning of Wayward Pines, you know,
right.
That
oh,
was
good.
Mr. Crouch's.
Okay.
So yep, and
I really am I'm appreciative of you calling in. Thank you so much, Carol. And tune in some more. Don't go away, okay?
Thanks, Carol.
I'll still be here, and I want to tell you this. I want to thank you. You're doing an absolute awesome job, Pam, and I don't know if anyone tells you that enough or explains that to you, but you are awesome for what you're doing for all of these authors.
Oh,
so that's all I have to say,
You're a doll. Thank you. But it's the guests that make it. It's just, you know, I'm the fangirl. You know, writers are my celebrities. So I appreciate that.
But they wouldn't be
thanks
there without you, without you. So there we are. Okay.
Thank you.
Y'all have a good day.
All right, doll. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and we've got another call, and I know who this is. Hi, Teresa. You're live.
Hi, Pam. Hi, Stephen. How are you?
You have to speak up. We can barely hear you.
Hi, Pam. Hi, Stephen. How are you tonight?
Hey, how are you doing, Teresa? I'm doing great.
I'm good. I just want to say that we are one of the fortunate few who got a advanced copy of Fractured State, and...
Awesome.
We're actually new readers to your books, and it was awesome. We can't wait to go back to read some of your earlier work.
Oh, good.
Teresa is the head mystery and thriller reviewer for our book review crew on Facebook, and she just posted an absolutely magnificent review of Fractured State. Right on Book Review Crew, and I know she's yet to go over to Amazon because I don't know if they're letting you. I don't think they're letting us write reviews yet. No, not yet. You're in pre-order status, they're not. Yeah. So, any questions you have for? Well, actually, have you read anything else that Steve's written, Teresa?
No, this is the first time, but I'm definitely going to go back and read more of his book.
All right, I'm going to send you the Jakarta Pandemic, okay? You're going to love it.
Great.
It's amazing.
Thank you.
Okay? You have any questions for Steve?
My husband and I both read Fractured State, and we both loved it, and we never agree on books that we like. So it was like a...
Oh, thanks. I'm glad Don liked
That's
it,
awesome.
Too. That's terrific. That's great. Do you have any questions for Steve?
No, just want to say keep up the good work. We really enjoy his writing.
Okay,
thank you.
Thanks, Teresa.
You.
Talk to you soon. Okay, good
night. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, 347-633-9609. All right, we're getting ready to talk about Fractured State. I posted today on all my Facebook pages a little bit about the synopsis of the story. And essentially what it is it's in 2035 is the date, Steve?
2035, yeah.
Okay, so will you tell the story, please? It's your book, your story.
Please don't ask me to do that. That's my other absolute weak area. I'm just gonna read the description. No, that would be a
okay. Go
boring.
Ahead.
So
sure.
Now,
go ahead.
No, so the book is set in the year 2035. So I wanted to go about 20 years into the future. I wanted to create a recognizable, but I would say vastly changed world. You call it near future dystopian. So, in my vision, there the southwestern United States is continued to be ravaged by the drought that they're experiencing right now, and it's already pretty bad. But 20 years from now, it hasn't let up, and the landscape is a complete ruin outside of California. So California has actually managed to stay inhabitable and viable because they took some early measures to actually keep the state just on the fringe of falling, I guess falling apart. And the way they did that was by really, I'd say, bearing down on the population. They've almost created a Big Brother state, and it's subtle. I think, I don't know if you would agree with that. Subtle, but not subtle. It's not people
well,
marching
you
in
get,
your
you definitely get it. Yeah, but you
yeah,
get
you
it.
Definitely get it. It's a,
the
it's
government
a
has
here.
Oversight over everything, so
right,
and they
right.
do it for the best of reasons. But the question's always: Do you want to have a better world and give up some of your freedoms?
Right.
Do you want your life to be better? But the payoff is a little bit uncomfortable. So is that right? Is that the question? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily a better world. It may be the same world everyone in the country is living in, but California is under such a strain that they're having to put up with this to stay in the Golden State. And I mean, there's a thousand of these reminders embedded in the book. But at the core of the entire story is Nathan Fisher, who is a he works for one of the big corporations, the San Diego County Water District, and and what he does is he essentially squeezes every bit of water out of the houses, and he's a water reclamation engineer, which is it's an actual profession now, but in the 20 years in a drought future, it's one of the most critical professions. And he witnesses something doing something to sort of illicit himself that puts his himself and his family in just unbelievable jeopardy.
Go ahead. but on top
right.
of that, you've created two extremes in the way people
right.
in California want to live. One of them being, should we secede from the United States because, hey, what we're doing is working, or should we stay a part of it? And therein lies the rub. And that's what Nathan Fisher stumbles on and doesn't recognize that's what the problem is. It is
exactly.
It's a magnificent book.
Thank you. Thank
Sorry,
you.
I'm eating a jelly belly because I'm so excited to talk about this book. I love this book. I really do.
Awesome. No.
I think this book is one of the best ones. It's on my short list for Book of the Year this year. I will tell you that. I have...
Awesome.
A very, very short list by now, and not because there are not great books out there. I will tell you, last year and this year, I've seen more exceptional books than I can ever recall seeing by newer authors, some by established authors, but boy, the writing is terrific out there right now. This book just blew me away.
The bar is set high. Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
It's very high. It's very high.
Yeah, I essentially combined, you know, it's definitely not, my post-apocalyptic, it's not a purely post-apocalyptic book. It's not a purely black ops book. It's what I wanted to create a combination, it's a pure thriller. I mean, it's just action-packed from pretty much start to finish.
It really is.
Yeah, once it picks up, I mean, it just keeps going and going. And I just finished book two and delivered it to Thomas and Mercer, and have gone through the developmental edits where we've really, there will be no changes to the story at this point. And the second book is just, I was so happy with the way the second book turned out, because I always have this problem, like, how the hell am I going to top this first book? And
right.
You
closed the story enough, Steve, but you still left open. There were still unanswered questions, which to me, in this type of a story, there must be. You could probably, and knowing how you write, I would imagine one could probably go to whatever the next book is and still be able to read it without having read Fractured State, but it would be a shame. The same way as not read Jakarta before I read Perseid. So it would have been nice, but because I would have had an introduction to why Alex Fletcher and his family were the way they were. But it's a remarkable writing job. It really is just terrific. Congratulations on such a fantastic, fantastic book.
Thank you so much.
So two books more or just one book more in this series?
I envision three books. I think that's kind of a new, that's my new standard. I wrote four books in the Perseid Collapse series. I hadn't really intended on the fourth book, but there were some unanswered questions. So, I never say never when it comes to the end of the story, but the core story will be told, I think, for this and three. The next book is called Rogue State. And it picks up right where Fractured State ends. It really just them dry. It's almost like if you were watching a movie, you wouldn't miss a beat.
Fantastic.
The third book will be the same way. I wish we could release them all at once, but that's not the way it works. So
no, it doesn't. It doesn't.
But it
gives
me time to
call.
Think about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there it does. It does. To plan. Let's see who's calling. Hi, you're live on the air. Who's this?
Well, this would be Stephen's friend and occasional co-conspirator, Mr. Powers.
Uh-huh. Mr. Powers, Mr. Randall Powers on the line here. Hi, Randy. How are you?
I'm well. How are you guys this evening? It sounds like you're great.
We're having fun. Talking about you, too. We've been talking about you.
I did hear that. I can't tell you. I was so red from so many miles away, I'm surprised you couldn't see me.
So talk. You've got the microphone. What's happening?
Well, I've enjoyed you guys' conversation this evening, but I did have a question for Stephen, and it kind of pulls the different things that you guys have been talking about this evening together. And I haven't read Fractured State yet. I will be very, very soon. It comes out any day now, and I'll be reading it then. But I do know that we've talked about some of this stuff before, but given the situation that you see anywhere you look right now, whether it's in Canada, what's going on in Alberta, we all know about the American West and the wildfires that we have here, and Sandy on the East Coast, and just all sorts of stuff like that. I see Fractured State as kind of one of the first books in a new wave that I'm calling like cli-fi, like climate fiction. And I know Steve and I have talked about it quickly before, but I just didn't know if you've had a chance to think about that any further, and if you think that's going to be something going forward that people might begin to explore, just given the things that we see around us all the time.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I didn't invent the term climate fiction, but at this point, it's been really reserved for what you would consider to be like kind of political activist fiction. Does that make sense? Not that there is not a point to fracture state. It's my first goal is to entertain, and then I want to intrigue and kind of enthral readers with, you know, the background. I work extensively to create the world, and so I think this would fall square in the middle of climate fiction because it addresses so many different aspects without beating readers over the head with it. And I hope that'll, I can't imagine this would not be kind of a niche or a subgenre that will become just way, way more prevalent. I'll let you in on a little secret for book two. I think it's hinted at that in book one, but, you know, we just saw, what state is it? Oklahoma, where they're having just repeated earthquakes in a certain region.
Sure.
And I think you shared that article, and we'll talk about the impact of your articles on my writing in a second, but that is something that occurs in this book, done purposely, is to create an event, a seismic event, by call it fracking, call it what you want. It's kind of hard not to draw that conclusion, but I think this just I think it will definitely fit squarely in that category and. You know, hopefully it'll pioneer that.
Well, when it comes to like just the stuff I've read is usually when you see climate in the past, you see climate brought into it in the future. It's because of some other event. So like you had a nuclear winter, right? So
mm-hmm.
now you can't grow crops or something like that. But this concept that you're running with is one that you know where I come from, but. And I'm all about it. I love the entire concept behind it. But I would like to believe that there's just so – it's such a fertile ground. There are so many ways that you could go with it as an author. You just have to pick something that you're interested in. It just so happens that I'm interested in all of it. But so it's kind of hard for me to narrow it down sometimes. But I'm very excited to read this book. I'm very excited to see what you did with it, and I know it's going to be great.
You should be receiving a copy very shortly, so
thank you very much.
Yeah, it's interesting that you're talking about climate and everything. You know that the governor, and we do call him the governor here in Florida, he don't allow anyone to say climate change. Nobody in any of the capitals allowed to say climate change because there's no such thing. So last year when there was a small earthquake here in Southwest Florida, how do you think people felt about that?
Or the fact that half of Miami spits water when the tide surges.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I lived in South Beach. There wasn't a day that went by that I couldn't drive down the main drag because the water rose up over the seawall. And that was from the little river that was not even the ocean. In Palm Beach County, you drive along and this was 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you drive along the water washes from the sea over into the yards of all those mansions. I'm not joking. I think that it's a very time. I agree with Randy that it's a very timely type of a thing. I hope people recognize that what you may be talking about here in your book, maybe 20 years into the future, but we can look at events now. Listen, you talk about Miami Beach. Do you know they measure every year the high rises that are built right on the dunes there? And they measure how far they're sinking into the ground.
Wow. The signs are here now. I mean, they're everywhere.
Right.
You know, California, East
right.
Coast, and
exactly.
Yeah, and I also, if I can say this, just a little bit of a plug for a different aspect of the book, is that you know, at its core, this is about Nathan Fisher, you know, a father protecting his family. I don't go too far from my roots in terms of, you know, what I've written before on the Jakarta pandemic, the Perseid collapse. You know, this, you know, that all of this is centered around this. The story of this
family.
Both of them, family and the wife. I mean, the Akira, they just want to keep themselves safe and get away from these people. But it's all, you know, you see that the Fisher family themselves, I mean, Nathan, being well in tune with this, has read the signs, and he's gone back and forth. He's, you know, been to Tucson. He's moved back to California.
Right.
You know, because he's been seeing what's happening and is able to kind of read the tea leaves, so to speak, better than other people are. Or, you know, he didn't have Randy Powers consulting and helping him read the tea leaves, so to speak.
Right.
I will say this, Steve, about your writing, if I could. It's just like with the Jakarta pandemic. I'm like you. I'm fascinated by that pandemic. So when you created that world and then built a thrilling story through it, that's what hooked me in the beginning. So I only expect that the Fishers will be doing something like that. And once again,
very much so,
the world is what is drawing me in to begin with. I just can't wait to see what they're going to have to do.
Cool.
Yeah.
You'll love it.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. Randy, tell everybody who you are and the name of your business, please.
I'm Randy Powers, and we just do a little thing on the side. We refer to it as practical tactical, which is just exactly what it sounds like. We just want to try to help someone who wants to take practical steps to give themselves a basic advantage, should life ever throw them a curveball, so that they can handle it without too much of a disruption. So
I want to say this on behalf of what Randy's doing. This is preparedness for every single person. Randy's not, you know, part of a militia. He's not a goofy or anything like that. If you don't think you'll ever need this, imagine how the people in New Orleans felt after Katrina. Bet they didn't think that it would turn into that nightmare. So if you're wise and you understand that, you know, crap happens, and you got to be prepared for it. Give us your website, Randy, and this is where you should go.
Oh, you can find us at www.practicaltactical4you.com, and there's a very deep bed of resources there, both in the blog and various pages. If you just look around, you should find a ton of stuff that can help you. And if you have any questions, please just reach out. You can find us on Facebook, through Twitter, through email, through the website, and we would love to chat with you if you have any questions.
And I want to just also tell you how sold I am on Randy's site is that he talks, he does a lot of videos and has some really honest discussions with the people who read his site and who follow his advice, because not only does he take care of the things like food, water, and shelter, but he talks about how to maintain your spirit and your soul. And those things are important because under stress, people fall apart. And so I cannot recommend this site enough. That's practicaltactical4you.com. If you didn't catch it and you want to know what it is, just pop on my page, ask me, and I'll post it for you. Randall Powers, thank you so much for joining the conversation. I truly appreciate it. Your
thanks, Randy.
Wise words are always appreciated.
Oh, thanks, guys, for talking with me for a moment. Steve, I can't wait to read your work, buddy.
Oh, yeah. You're going to love it.
You're going to love it. You're going to love it.
All right. All right, guys.
Good night. And hugs to Riley.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Lovely
awesome.
Riley. Yeah, I know.
Oh my God.
So you've already finished. She's gorgeous. You know, I started her hashtag Riley Love, so I have to take credit for that. But anyway, true. Steve, we've been an hour chatting away here. I could go on forever with you because you've got so many great books to talk about. But I'd like you to come back sometime. And,
I will.
You know, we've talked about that and talked about having you come on maybe with a couple of mutual friends and you'll take the microphone and have a conversation. How would that be?
Sounds great. That's pretty perfect.
I wouldn't. Yeah, I would love to have that. I would love to see it happen. On Friday, Jeff Crawford is with me. He's a suspense author. His fourth book is out now. So join me on Friday, usual time, 9 o'clock. And then next week, I've got John McGoran is coming in, Ward Larson, and Allison Leota. So you're going to love hearing all this stuff. Stay tuned to Authors on the Air. Thank you so much for being with me, everyone. Steve, you're the best, my friend. Talk to you again soon, right?
Hey, thanks, y'all. Definitely. Thanks, everyone.
All righty. Bye-bye. And thank you for listening, everyone. Have a good evening, good night, and thank you, Mom and Dad.